definitely human.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Four strangers have been thrown together by circumstance in rural Cumbria, 1919. A pall of tragedy hangs over them. The friends and relatives that our heroes have traveled to visit are long dead, and they find themselves trapped without purpose in this convalescent center in the woods. All that awaits them now is awkward dinner conversation and restless slumber. Until, that is, they discover something far more disturbing in The Infinite Bat. The Secret of Drakelow Hall, Part 2. Our four heroes enter the manor and are brought straight through to the main hall directly in front of the entrance, where a long table has been set with crisp white linen and simple white dishes. The room is dimly lit with gaslight fixtures, and cool, damp drafts make the edges of the tablecloth flutter. There is the sensation of being the last victorious survivors of a long, terrible siege, standing in a flickering pool of yellow light while the empty blue dark of the manor's many rooms reigns around them. Sir Nigel is already seated at the head of the table, looking slightly disgruntled, as are about a dozen men in military uniforms, and about a half dozen nurses. There are four free places at the end of the table, opposite Sir Nigel and his family. As they enter, the soldiers stumble to their feet and introduce themselves, their names mostly lost in the wooden scraping of their chairs. The nurses simply smile warmly and nod from their seats. Nurse Boskin looks at Dorothy and gives her a cheeky wave.
I wave back.
Yeah, you wave back, but you do notice that you don't think you were on cheeky waving terms when you last left her.
Okay.
Is that how you all greet each other in the... the nurse business.
there's not much socializing, actually. Not my experience.
You seem very friendly.
We do, don't we?
It's a little off-putting, actually.
It is, isn't it?
I'm Sebastian, by the way. I'm not sure if we've met.
Dorothy Taylor, I think we have met, but yes.
Oh, with the dogs, yes.
With the dogs, yes.
That was you.
Yeah.
There's many nurses here.
There are a lot of nurses.
It's fine. It's fine.
So the rest of the dinner guests are awkwardly looking at this exchange while they're sitting. And they pause a beat, and then Sir Nigel...
I'm sweating so much. I'm like fumbling with my cigarette and then just putting it back in the pocket. It's fine. Yeah, it's my mistake.
And so Nigel pauses and then lets it kind of hang there for a second. They say, well, sit down. Anyways, we have something lovely for you tonight, don't we? What do we have, Nurse Ackland? The head nurse is kind of authoritative, imposing presence. Chin firmly up, says, tonight there will be fish consommé for everyone. And a steaming kind of pot, a big ceramic pot is brought out, filled with this thick yellow... reduction, I'd say. It's thicker than a broth, but thinner than a soup. And it's ladled out.
thicker than a broth but thinner than a soup.
A broth is like water. A soup is like thick.
I think a stew would be thick. I feel like a soup is one step up from broth. I'm with you on this
one.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
But it's in that narrow interstice between the soup and the broth. Okay. You know, that so is where the consommé lies.
I'm with you.
Right?
Anyway.
Tell me more about the consommé. Magic consommé. I want to roll and cult check on the consommé.
Yeah, I'm not ready to take sides yet. Clearly, that lines have been drawn.
Yeah, you pick up one of the extremely grand silver spoons that has been arrayed, the soup spoon, of course, you know. You might be having a little bit more trouble, Joy, with the four sets of cutlery that have been arrayed, which is a bit odd because, as you understand it, the consommé is the only course for dinner tonight. But
excuse me, I'd sort of say to everyone in general, is there any food at the dinner this evening?
A couple of the nurses kind of giggle awkwardly and nervously and mutter something to each other. Nurse Ackland says, "This is dinner. You will find it most nourishing."
"I certainly will not, ma'am. I will not be eating this. Thank you."
She kind of, her chin is almost completely up, but it still manages to tuck itself up a little bit higher.
I don't mean to be rude, but I'm used to eating real food, not this disgusting looking slop.
Battenberg, please.
It's St. Battenberg, Mr. St. Battenberg. Thank you very much, Mrs.
Yes?
That's all I have to say. I'm sorry I've forgotten your name. Cavendish, of course.
Yes, of course.
So Nurse Ackland is now leading the rest of the nurses in saying grace. Sir Nigel follows along half-heartedly. The soldiers are all deep in their contemplations as well. And after a few minutes, everyone starts tucking in. Do you also eat the soup?
I was gonna, but you asked the question.
It smells delicious. It smells like the sea.
I eat the consommé.
I eat the consommé.
I eat it too. Okay.
I do not eat it. I've never eaten anything that's come from the sea in my entire life. And I'm not about to stop now. No. You eat things that have legs. There are rules, damn it.
Well, you have been given a rather sad-looking dinner roll, as has everyone else on your table, so...
I eat it enthusiastically.
Okay, great. As you start eating the soup is delicious, by the way. In terms of texture, it's about halfway between a broth and a soup. It's got this kind of velvety smoothness to it, right? But it's rich and flavoursome, and it's very well spiced. So you enjoy it immensely.
Okay.
I'm delicious. Incredibly jealous at this point, but I've gone too far.
I say, what a delicious supper. I look at Battenberg.
I'm like breathing in deeply because it smells so good. I'm just like, no, this is all the nourishment I need. Oh, yes.
How's your role?
It's lovely. Battenberg. Mr. St. Battenberg, I think you'll find yes. That it is. My name. Mrs. Cavendish, is it?
Yes.
Really? Wow. Anyway, I'm very much enjoying my role.
So, Nigel strikes up... unless you have something else to say to Sebastian.
No.
I didn't mean anything by it. I see now that I have offended you. All I meant by that
was
that couldn't imagine the kind of man that would commit himself to you... under God, in that way, it boggles the mind. That's all I meant by that.
Sir Nigel kind of sees what's going on here, and he loudly says, Mr. St. Battenberg.
Yes.
What was your time in the war like?
It was fine. both my hands start shaking. Perfectly fine.
He sees this, but he doesn't seem to really pay mind to this. You can see that the other soldiers are a bit nervous that he's asking so obviously about what must have been a traumatic experience in your past. But Sir Nigel seems heedless of this, and he says, "Very violent, I hear."
Yes.
There's much blood and mud.
Yes, indeed, yes.
But also the glory.
The
You'd think so.
the esprit de corps.
Yeah. Now my eye is twitching. the remaining roll in my hand is now just like breadcrumbs. Smashed it. Oh.
He's got his soup spoon up to his mouth while staring intently at you, and he say,
"How many of the Hun did you slaughter out in the fields?"
I'm just sort of arranging cutlery on the table now. Yes! Good stuff.
At this point, one of the patients, one of the soldiers, and you will have heard him in the kind of patter of the conversation, introduced as Arthur Watson. He's a scarred-looking man. And he's got this walnut brown skin and misaligned teeth that are bared as he's trying to bring the spoon to his mouth. But his hands are shaking and trembling, and he lets the spoon drop into his consommé, and it splashes, and he's right next to Angela Gresley. It splashes some consommé onto her beautiful red dress. There's a horrified silence that descends upon the table now. Nigel looks straight at Arthur Watson, then over to Angela, who seems to be ignoring the whole situation, but she's kind of frozen with her spoon in midair, halfway to her mouth. You almost think she's trembling, but she's not. She's perfectly still. Arthur is trembling now. Then the moment passes. Nigel continues his strained conversation with you, perhaps a little bit more distractedly, though.
Okay, I have now, like, just... Is there kind of, like, a cloth over the table?
Yes, is a
that
table
is now
cloth.
Just in bunches in my clenched.
Okay, so Nigel starts to sense that this avenue of conversation isn't really taking him to a comfortable place. So he backs off a little bit, and then you kind of all 20 or so of you fall into a relatively strained conversation, just full of gritted geniality between you. But the soup finishes. And the meal starts to... What?
Consumé.
But as the meal wears on, it kind of thickens and congeals into what you would normally call a soup, right? And the meal starts to wrap up. Some of the patients start looking a little bit restless, like they'd like to get up and go outside, have a cigarette, that kind of thing. Make a perception check, guys.
7, 19, 13, 16.
Okay, so Cornelia and Dorothy, both of you notice that Arthur Watson, despite it being fully half an hour later and no one has mentioned this incident since, he seems to still be shaking uncontrollably with a look of panic in his eyes. And yes, he hasn't eaten anything since he dropped the spoon. And you also notice that his teeth, what few of them are left, are misaligned, but he seems to be missing far more of his teeth than a man of his age should be. Looking around, Cornelia, now that your interest has been piqued, you actually notice that more than a couple of the soldiers are missing more than a couple of their teeth.
Oh, shit.
Some of them have got kind of cigarettes wedged between the gaps in there.
Hence the consommé, I guess.
I ask Nurse Boskins about that.
Nurse Boskin. Okay. Nurse Boskin is busily starting to bring away the dishes back to the kitchens to wash. As you kind of stop her and putting a hand on her shoulder, she turns to you and says, "Oh, what's that, dear? Did you want to help clear the table?" "Oh, that's lovely."
"No, Nurse Boskins, I'm wondering, why are there so many men here that are missing teeth? That seems very inconsistent with the sort of injuries I would expect from wartime."
"Oh, the war is just terrible. I think it was the artillery, dear."
"Nurse Boskins, please, I worked in a field hospital for more than 2 years, and I've never seen anything like this."
Her mouth works soundlessly for a few moments, and then she says, "Well, I simply must clear these consommé plates away right away. Be dear and help," and she hands you quite firmly a couple of plates and goes back to the table.
I put the plates down on the table.
Ooh. She looks back at you and says, "Is something the matter, dear? You seem quite flustered."
"I'm not flustered. I'm quite upset. This is very out of the ordinary."
Okay, at this point, you hear a piercing scream ring out from one floor up. Everyone stops what they're doing and looks around. then the men start to make their way, start hobbling. Some of them are injured, start hobbling up the stairs. The nurse is following. Nigel looks particularly concerned. He's about in the middle of the pack of the people who are going up the stairs, but everyone seems to be flowing up the stairs towards the second floor, where the scream continues.
I follow them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I follow them too.
So you go up the stairs and you go into a quite plusher part of the manor. This looks like it's been set up mostly as bedrooms, more or less as intended. You can imagine that this is how it was set up even before the war. And you go down one of the hallways to the left to go into a relatively well-appointed bedroom. But what you immediately notice is that there is a dead soldier, or a man at least, in the middle of the room on the floor. And standing over him are two nurses. One of them is the one who's screaming, and the other one is not screaming. I'm just standing over him, looking.
Is there any indication of how he died?
Yes. So you can approach him. You can see that there's a big pool of blood under his head. But now there's a crowd inside this relatively small bedchamber, and all the patients are in there talking animatedly. The nurses are in there.
Have you checked his pulse? see if he's breathing. The heart. You can check by the heart. You probably know more than me, Dorothy.
Sir Nigel is pressing his way through the crowd. He looks down and he starts in shock, and then he starts screaming, "Murder! Murder!" And almost immediately, Dr. Blythe, who you met coming down the stairs, puts his hand around him and he says, "We don't know that. We don't know that, Sir Nigel. Let's go now. We'll get you something for your constitution." And he kind of sweeps him out of the room quite quietly, and he looks back to the nurses pointedly, and the nurses immediately busy themselves about the body.
Turn to Dorothy and say extremely loudly, "We should assume it's murder!"
That seems premature at this point.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so make wisdom checks, all of you. Okay.
19.
9.
19. 16.
Okay, so the three of you gain 5 dread, and you, Sebastian, gain 10 dread.
Oh, God.
Okay.
So,
I think he's dead! Oh, God!
Yeah, there's something about the way he's face down in a pool of his own blood that reminds you, that brings back unwholesome memories.
There's something about the way that he's face down in a pool of blood that brings back horrible memories.
Okay, so Nurse Ackland is now trying to control the rabble and is ordering the patients to step outside, go back to their rooms. The situation will be cleared up in a moment. She actually busies the rest of the nurses out as well. As this is happening, you four, if you want to, have free rein to weave around the crowd as it disperses and have a look around the room. So there's a few elements of the room that you can have a closer look at. Mm-hmm. You can have a look at the bed, you can have a look at the dresser, you can have a look at, through the window, you can have a look at the body itself, or you can speak to the two nurses who were found with the body. You don't know their names yet, but yeah, one of them is the one who is screaming. The other one has this slightly far away look.
I'd like to approach the screaming woman.
Okay. So you approach a nervous young woman. She's got a long neck and a pronounced overbite. She looks like she's stopped screaming, but she looks like she's still screaming inside, and she might break back out into a scream at any point. Her chin is quivering and she's wringing her hands.
I'd like to sort of comfortingly put my hand on her shoulder.
Okay.
And just sort of, you know, look her in the eye and say, "Hey, all right!"
So make a persuasion check, but make that at disadvantage. So roll 2d20s and tell me the lower number.
That would be a 1.
Okay. As your paw slams down on her shoulder, her knees buckle. She looks up at you. She hadn't even noticed you coming because she was so distracted. And she just lets rip one of the loudest screams. It nearly pierces your tympani. And she starts screaming, "Murderer! It's him! It's him!"
I would also like to start screaming. Ah! Ah! Stop it! You're screaming in my face!
Classic Battenberg.
While they're doing that, can I check the body and do a medicine check to see if I can determine cause of death?
Okay, great. Nurse Ackland is headed over to you two and is trying to resolve this situation. It involves me screaming.
I'm just holding her and shaking with her, like swaying side to side as we both scream.
I'll look out the window as well.
Okay.
I feel something out there.
Great. And Joy, did you
want... I'm checking the dresser.
Okay, so let's do the body first.
One.
Oh.
Oh, God.
Do I make him even more dead?
Are you alive? Okay, so you approach the body, you kneel down, he is in fact dead. There's something about the stench of the blood that makes you nauseous. There's some, maybe you've eaten something wrong, the consommé hasn't sat well with you, but you need to take a moment. You'll be able to make this check again a little bit later on, but right now you're kind of overpowered with the stench of it. You need to take a step back and compose yourself. Cornelia, you were looking...
At the window.
Make a perception check.
Three.
You're the worst.
Oh my god. I'm just looking out a window. I do not see something.
Just slamming your face through the window.
The curtains are drawn. I can't see anything.
It's actually a Lovecraft story. You know that one where he thinks that there's a huge monster coming over the hill and it's just an insect on the window?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a natural one on looking out the window. So you look out, you can see the rain is falling. It's slowly intensifying, and now it's a proper rainfall. The darkness of the forest looms beyond the expanse of the green. And all you can see is a moment where you can see a pinprick of light poking out from the darkness of the forest. You don't know exactly where it is, but you see one pinprick of light.
Okay.
Joy, you were looking at the dresser.
Yes. 11.
Okay. Yeah.
We got over 10.
So this is a fairly ornate wooden dresser unit. This is clearly a very rich man's house, and you've not seen one quite as nice as this. You see that there is a wallet on top of the dresser. Opening it up, you can see that it's empty, though. Completely empty. Not a bit of cash, not a card or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's got a locket as well, and locket doesn't have a picture in it. It's kind of a simple brass locket, the kind that should have a picture of a sweetheart or something like that. Inside the dresser, as you instinctively rifle through the drawers, you find a loaded pistol in the top drawer.
Could this be the murder weapon?
It could be.
Do I want to hold on to the murder weapon? I think I will tell. Is the room really full of people, or is it quite quiet? So, it's only us, right? And there are a couple of nurses and the screaming commotion.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think I would tell Dorothy.
Okay. So Dorothy is kind of on her knees a little bit away from the body, but she's composed herself now, so you bring over the pistol.
Is it warm?
It is not. It is cold. And in fact, now I'm going to let you make another medicine check.
16.
Oh, wow. Brilliant. Okay. So now that you've taken a moment, you've composed yourself, you can see that the body crumpled face down on the floor, his hands are still clutching at his throat, and his legs are tucked up in an almost infantile position. His mouth is pouring with blood, and you can see that there's no gunshot wound or anything like that. In fact, you don't see any prominent cuts or stab wounds. You can see, though, that all of his teeth appear to have been ripped out. His eyes are frozen in panic. He's still wearing his striped pajamas that are now, at least the tops of them are soaked with this dark red blood. And you can notice that looking at his mouth a little bit in more detail, which is easy because it's gaping open, his tongue has been ripped out as well, and that there are wounds on the corners of his lips, the corners of his mouth, as if something was forced down or forced out of his throat.
Well, that's very unpleasant.
So make a wisdom check at this point.
9.
So you gain 10 dread.
Oof. Okay. I'm going to advise Joy to keep hold of that pistol, since we know it's not the murder weapon, and also that shit's pretty fucked up right now.
I slip the pistol into my pocket of my blazer, yeah.
Great.
So we don't know she's got a pistol at this moment.
Right? You're still screaming, and you're still staring out the window. Make a stealth check.
And this one?
Mm-hmm.
11.
Okay, so you think you managed to do it discreetly. It looks like the only other people here besides you two are them two and Nurse Ackland and the two nurses. They seem to be all, their attention seems to be firmly elsewhere. So no one, you're pretty confident that no one's noticed you take it. So at this point, Nurse Maynard has stopped screaming. And Nurse Ackland has encouraged her to go and tend to her duties elsewhere in the manor. So she's done so. Nurse Ackland turns to you with a steely stare of great disapproval.
I just smile at her. Yes, we sorted her out, didn't we? Yes. She'll be all right. I pat her on the shoulder. She'll be fine. It'll be all right.
Okay, so Nurse Ackland starts going to the body, and she starts dragging it out by his feet.
Okay.
The other nurse, with a faraway look, Nurse Ackland looks up at her and says, "Nurse Bray, please help me with this." And her vacant look flutters for a moment, and then she stoops down and grabs the body's arms and starts dragging the body out with Nurse Ackland.
So at this point, the room is empty?
At this point, the room is empty, yes.
Save for a trail of blood, presumably.
Yeah, so a huge kind of swath of blood.
Okay. I want to go and find Arthur.
Was
Trembling
there any...
Arthur.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was there anything else in the room that we hadn't investigated yet? Like the bed or something?
Yeah, you can have a look at the bed.
Could I just do that before we find...
Go for it.
I've got an investigation skill, so...
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to be pretty good at this. Four.
Nope.
It's a bed.
All you can tell from the bed, it's a fairly grand affair made of dark wood with heavy red silk covers. You can tell that it's been slept in and it looks like it's been made very recently. And you can also detect the faint smell of urine coming from it.
Okay.
I'm just staring at the bloody trail.
Mm.
Okay. So as you're staying, you hear a door opening downstairs. It sounds like the main door, because as it opens, you can hear the sound of the rain and the storm outside. And then it fades again as the door clicks shut. Are you still in the room? Or are you stepping out of the room? You just kind
I'm
of
stepping out of the room.
You're going to find Arthur?
Yeah, I want to find Arthur.
Okay.
Missing teeth.
Our four heroes step back downstairs to a scene of muted anxiety, as the patients and nurses stand in huddled groups in the foyer, smoking and discussing what should be done. Then the imposing mahogany main doors of Drakelow Hall sweep open as Tom Gresley, his brown suit blackened with the rain, stumbles inside. His chest heaves with exertion and he scans the room. "The roads are no good," he croaks. "Storms kicked up the whole forest. More than a few fallen trees on the road." A murmur of concern ripples through the assembled crowd. "I'm afraid we're trapped here for tonight," says Tom, as rain viciously lashes the windows, such a meager bulwark against the violence of the storm. You've been listening to The Secret of Drakelow Hall, written by Giorgio Mariani and produced and edited by David Knight and Tom Dalling, with music by Jonathan Day. Starring Eleanor Kohler as Dorothy Taylor, Maximilian John as Cornelia Cavendish, David Knight as Sebastian St. Battenberg, and Charlie May as Joy Dutton. I am Giorgio Mariani, Games Master. You can follow The Infinite Bad, as well as our other podcast shows, on Twitter at HumanDefinitely, and support the production of this series on Patreon. That's patreon.com/definitelyhuman. The Infinite Bad is a Definitely Human production.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.